This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to the Football Ramble. We are heading back to the stadiums. It's Tuesday, the 24th of November. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Yes, we will get on to last night's matches very shortly and some other good stuff. But we have to start with this really positive news that was announced yesterday. Fans, we are heading back to the stadiums. I think this is brilliant news, Luke.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm very excited. I think we've been used, haven't we, over the last however many months to see... what is essentially a facsimile of football, I think, for a number of different reasons. But one of the main reasons is that there's no fans in the stadiums. And although we must approach this news with what I would describe as tentative scepticism, because you never really know with this government, and also you never know with this virus, because it can be exceptionally dangerous and can kick your ass when you feel like you might have been about to turn a corner. But 4,000 fans, I think, maximum in the lower risk areas from next week can only be seen as a good thing. And it'll be fascinating if we were to take it just about the football to say that, how's that going to affect things? Because we've seen it affect things in a big way when it comes to teams' home records, with the exception of Liverpool, who are just ridiculous. But a lot of the teams' home records have been different. There's been a lot more away wins than we would have seen before. Is this going to come in as a plot twist halfway through the season and start changing the dynamic again? Do you know what you think?
Absolutely. I mean, 4,000 fans is a weird amount as well, isn't it? In most like top flight stadiums,
it is a bit, isn't it?
You're barely going to sort of register that.
That's the Emirates generally, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to getting back down to the Emirates, because it's been such a long time since I've been there, with, you know, 4,000 of you know, our biggest and brightest, and just giving those slackers hell. They have had such a break from the grief they deserve as they step out onto that pitch, putting their bodies on the line for their club.
Let's see you miss a chance now, Pierre-Emerick.
Yeah. So it's going to be strange, isn't it? Like, it's going to be a really, really different dynamic. I suppose we haven't really thought too much about what these baby steps back towards full stadiums are going to be. But I mean, we have seen some international football and some football in European leagues where they've had a sort of comparable amount of fans in, and it does sound a bit like a training game almost, doesn't it, when you see it on TV. So this is going to be going to be very weird. I think the atmosphere might be flatter, given that we've all got used to watching the fake crowd noise. Well, and that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and but I've started watching the games without fake crowd noise now. Because I'm fed up of it, and I want to hear people getting annoyed. I heard Kevin De Bruyne getting really annoyed at the weekend about the encroachment he accused people of. I think I can't remember which Spurs player it was, but there was encroachment on a corner being taken, which was interesting. But an interesting aspect of this, Jules, is that so it's going to be dependent on what tier the area of the country is in at the time.
Yeah.
Now that is fascinating, because if you limit capacity to 50% of or 4,000 fans, whichever is lower, in some leagues in the country, it's going to have a much bigger impact than it would. So for example, is there going to be a huge impact if 4,000 fans jump into the Emirates? I'd say probably not. But is it going to make a difference lower down the divisions? And if it is, what does that mean for the fairness of the competition? Because as I've already mentioned, we've seen people's home records, people's away records being slightly different this season, to say the least. If you get to a crunch game towards the end of the season and one team is allowed a certain amount of fans in because they're in a lower tier to another team and they're both vying for a title or to escape relegation, is it an even playing field? Because say what you like about empty stadiums at the moment, and I've already said it's like a facsimile of football and it's not ideal, of course, it's at least fair across the board, right?
Yeah, and on top of that as well, Luke, there also might be some stadiums where there'll be no fans at all, because if you're in a tier three area, the stadiums aren't going to be allowed to have any fans whatsoever. And by the way, we should hopefully know what tiers we're in by around Thursday. The government are hoping to announce it by then. So at the moment, if you're lucky enough to be in one of the lower risk areas, so in tier one, then 4,000 fans will be allowed into these sporting venues, or 50% of the capacity, whichever's lower. And then in tier two areas, it's up to 2,000 fans. But as I said, no fans allowed in tier three. So this is interesting, because as you say, Luke, this could mean that certain stadiums and certain fan bases won't have any fans at all in comparison to others. And is that fair? I mean, I think there will come a time in the season where this will start to become a bit of a discussion point, won't it?
I think, though, that unfortunately the situation we're in, these sort of variables around off-pitch fairness and unfairness, are just something we have to compromise on because of the situation. Like, I feel like, you know, this season, the message of this season in a lot of ways is like a middle-aged man going, well, life isn't fair. You know what I mean? It's just sort of like we just have to deal with it in the ways that we can. And I don't know what a solution to that situation is, because people's health is what is being managed. Really,
but there's all sorts of aspects of football which don't necessarily seem fair anyway, and we shouldn't forget that. But I mean, it's going to be down to the clubs to decide, I think. At the time of recording, the clubs themselves are able to choose how these fans are given these tickets and who comes in, who doesn't. And there's suggestions that, you know, at some of the Premier League grounds, it'll be these platinum members or these gold members, or basically the people who've paid the most, which you kind of understand the logic there. But what I would do if it were my club is I would get people to start auditioning, and I would be taking a decibel measure, and the 4,000, well, it is 4,000, loudest people would be, like, for example, Big Pav, I always talk about on the show, he's claimed to fame as being the loudest member of any room he's ever been in. Get him in there straight away, because it's going to make a huge difference.
For example, if you were auditioning to be, say, your club's loudest fan, could you bring a bell? Or would that be seen as an unfair advantage?
Yeah, you have to sanitise it.
How?
A bell?
Trust me, it'll need some sanitising anyway.
Big
Johnny
bell?
Westwood at Pompey. Jim's winding me up, Jules, because John Westwood, the famous Pompey fan, with the bell.
Right, got it,
You know, if we're gonna start talking about embarrassing South Coast club fans. Jules Breach, how are you doing?
Oh, come on. Look,
the Mandalorian, how are you doing?
Have you heard how loud those seagulls are? They will wake you up any morning of the week.
Absolutely terrifying. Yeah. And they're massive as well.
Yeah.
Like, everyone goes, oh, it's because they eat so many chips. But it's like, if I eat chips, I don't get taller.
the biggest, I am actually quite tall and I do eat a lot of chips. So
maybe there's something to that.
But I actually think the biggest seagulls I've ever seen have been in Cornwall, not Brighton.
Really?
They're probably on holiday from
Brighton.
What
do they eat?
Yeah, I think I think they just booze a lot.
Right, fair.
They booze a lot, and so they eat a lot of kebabs, yeah.
I once tried to feed a Malteser to a seagull, and it was one of the most amusing things I've ever seen in my life, because they can't pick them up with their beaks.
Cruelty.
I know.
Rambles, Jules Breach, and cruelty.
Yeah. Oh, don't. He didn't eat it.
Had recently pulled a pigeon's head off.
What?
So, yeah.
What?
Really?
They're horrible. They're horrible things.
Do you remember? Do you guys remember back in the day when the world wasn't as mad as it is now? There was a massive story because a pelican in St James's Park in central London was filmed eating a pigeon.
Yeah.
Oh. No.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest stories of the year then. Back in the heady days of like 2008 or whatever, when nothing happened.
I don't remember that. That's
that wouldn't even make the news in brief these days.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, heady days. We had the cat in a bin woman.
Yeah, exactly.
All that stuff.
Nothing going on back then, Jules.
No, there wasn't. But some other good COVID news, which I feel like is something we don't really say very often, but also announced yesterday, is that organised grassroots football can also make a return, which is great news for particularly a lot of young kids who haven't been able to socialise. And we've talked already quite a lot on Football Ramble about the mental health benefits of everyone playing grassroots football as well. And gyms opening, leisure centres reopening across all tiers. So Luke, you can get back in the gym.
Thank you very much. And I would like to, what I'd like to know, Jules, is as this man sat next to me is our most notable gym, will you be reopening for yourself for people to frequent you for a monthly fee?
I'm always open for a fee.
There you go. Jim's actually flouted COVID lockdown by remaining open the whole time as a gym, which is very disappointing.
Well, you know.
You're a little rebel.
You can pay him a monthly fee and swim all over him. He don't mind. On a more serious note, I think you know, look, clearly managing the virus and managing the transmission between people and keeping on top of it all is of paramount importance. But you're absolutely right to touch on the fact that, you know, a lot of these things are really important as well. You know, being able to go and play football with your friends, being able to go to the gym, it's massively important to a lot of people. And I think if they can be managed effectively, I think there's an aspect of the reputation of places like gyms, not Jim himself. Getting confusing. Where they're just, it's all just meatheads who just, you know, they can do something else or whatever, go for a run or whatever. Like, Jim, you're a testament to this. You started going to the gym. It was a massive part of your life, and it turned your life around, because you were an absolute nightmare before that, weren't you?
I was a mess, yeah.
So now he's having a great time.
Sad, grey mess.
Yeah.
And now I'm just sad.
So it's good news all round. If we can manage these things effectively and we can stay on top of the virus as well, it can only be a good thing. And I think, you know, I'm hoping after 2020 has been a complete write-off for lots of different reasons, 2021 will, fingers crossed, be a little bit different.
Yeah, I think with the grassroots football stuff in particular, I think it makes complete sense. It's almost like a common sense move when you think that, especially when you talk about the younger generation, they've all been going to school anyway and mixing with all sorts of other households. So the fact that they're allowed to just go out and play football with their mates now and actually train again and do the stuff that they love doing in their spare time, it makes complete common sense to me. So yeah, lots of good news in the last 24 hours, which is good. Let's move on to last night's matches now. Couple of games to touch on. Burnley getting their first win of the season. We'll come on to that. But let's start with what was the better of the two games, I'd say. Wolves won, Southampton won. Goals from Neto and Theo Walcott. It was actually quite an entertaining draw, this one. A hard-fought point for both sides. And I thought that what was quite interesting heading into the game is that there was all this talk about whether or not Connor Cody would be fit and be able to play, because he'd been self-isolating after the international break. And he didn't pass that test. He finished his self-isolation period, but because he hadn't trained with the team, he couldn't start. And that meant that Wolves went with a slightly different setup to normal. They played with four at the back, which left them quite open in the first half. But it did mean that in terms of their attack, they had more shots than they've ever had since being promoted to the Premier League. So it's actually a really entertaining game, Jim.
Yeah, it was. And that, I guess that gives Nuno a bit of food for thought, doesn't it? That if he does want to you know, really, really ramp it up, and it's not like Wolves are shot shy to begin with, that he has got that option if they really want to sort of click into another gear, which could actually be useful for a team like Wolves that are effectively looking to expand their margins at every opportunity, because they finished seventh in the past two seasons, haven't they? So they're going to want to go and you know, go a little bit better than that this year. But it was a really good game, wasn't it? Despite, I mean, the scoreline suggests that it was kind of a little bit drab, but actually it was pretty good because they're two teams that move the ball really, really well. So even though Wolves probably had the better of it when you look at how many shots they had, Southampton always looked like they could do something as well. And I feel like I'm starting to feel for people that enjoy, quite beardy football fans that enjoy talking about underrated players, because I think Stuart Armstrong may now have tipped over from being underrated into just being rated.
Oh, okay.
So it's a sad day for them.
What's the official bureau for that kind of judgment, though? Because I feel like we need to know that.
I think it's probably Monday Night Football, isn't it? If yeah, you're focused on in Monday Night Football
yeah,
in some way,
then you cross
then
the threshold.
You've crossed the line, yeah.
Speaking of shots, I think, and I'm going to incur the wrath of all the stat watchers everywhere, but I think I'm right in saying that every outfield player for Wolves in this game had a shot, with the exception of Ruben Neves, who always shoots, which is quite a weird thing.
What, last night's game?
Yeah, and I think Pedro Neto, who came on for Ruben Neves, obviously scored.
Yeah.
Makes up for that.
Pretty much immediately as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, and please don't, I mean, you can write in if you want, but I'm pretty sure everyone apart from Ruben Neves had a shot for Wolves, outfield players at least.
All right, I was going to say, not the goalkeeper.
No, he didn't.
That's a shame.
But when Nuno was asked after the game if he would ever play four at the back again, it's like he didn't understand the question, wasn't it? It was a bit like, he kind of looked a little bit wistful.
Yeah.
And then just talked about how happy he was. And there was an amazing shot of Nuno and Ralph Hasenhüttl / David Morrissey walking off the pitch together at the end, because they had a little chuckle at the end, didn't they? And it genuinely looked like there were two detectives walking away from like a serious crime scene. Like that, you could see their breath. One has got a massive beard. They were kind of looking at each other. It was a very powerfully dramatic scene.
It was. It's funny, isn't it? Like, do you remember when Antonio Conte started at Chelsea and it didn't have the best start? So he switched to five at the back.
Against Arsenal.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we hadn't seen that in, like, it felt like ever.
Yeah.
And
since Euro 96.
Like this real maverick move.
Yeah.
And now people are kind of, like, going mad at the idea of playing four at the back, as if it's the most kind of controversial, unusual thing.
It's a new system.
It used to be literally every team would set up like that for years at a time.
Well, and Southampton are a team who they played 4-4-2 yesterday. They played 4-4-2 a decent amount, and they're an exceptionally well-drilled, well-organised team. I think big top brass will be able to tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm 99.9% sure that Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid play 4-4-2 quite a lot, or they have done in the past, and they're a really well-drilled side. I think people get too het up with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, the idea that you're vulnerable if you've only got four defenders.
Yeah. I mean, Connor Cody is a huge miss for Wolves for obvious reasons. I would have him start in for England. I think he's a fantastic centre-back. He's brilliant in that three. If England want to play a three, I'd play Connor Cody. Jules obviously picked up that he was self-isolating, but they'll be desperate to get him back. Overall, I think it was a well-thought-out game with a nice tempo, enjoyable to watch when compared to the other game that happened last night, which we'll talk about later. And I think a draw was a fair result. Two, as much as it pains me to say it, on one side of the ledger, two very good teams.
Yeah.
So, and let's not forget that Southampton were without Danny Ings as well. So, you know, there's a lot of positives to take for both sides, but the most positives we can take are the fact that both Nuno and Ralph Hasenhüttl both look like men you'd be happy to rally around and stand behind and look to in a crisis. And we are in a national crisis at the moment. So that's why they're both doing so well.
Absolutely.
They 100% went into Nuno's office and had a glass of red wine, didn't they?
Oh, totally.
I don't reckon it was a red wine. I reckon
what
it was
it
a
was?
Very strong black coffee out of a polystyrene cup. And one of them said to the other, he's killed before and he'll kill again, and we've got to stop it. And they are now currently in some kind of 80s saloon car driving to another crime scene, perhaps on some wasteland by the Thames, looking about what they're going to do next.
Yeah, and periodic reminder, as any sort of joke like this comes up, Ian Desayu, former Pompey defender, is genuinely a homicide detective in Amsterdam.
He might be retired by now.
He might have done, actually.
That fact has been doing the rounds for so long.
It could just
be
one last case, though. Get
him in, specialist.
Amazing. Yeah. Hire him.
Brilliant, isn't it? It's interesting that we've spoken about Wolves going to four at the back rather than three, but Southampton's goal was kind of uncharacteristically sloppy at the back from Wolves, wasn't it?
Because it was.
Theo Walcott just sort of left with a gaping goal, and he will punish you then. There's a lot of times where Theo will not punish you.
Yeah.
Those is likely to be one of them.
He said that he couldn't remember his last goal for Southampton.
I mean, he was a little boy, wasn't he?
It's half his age ago.
I mean, it was so long ago, though, wasn't it? Like, what, 15-odd years ago, which is
crazy.
It'd
be like me trying to remember something that I did of note when I was 20, and I can confirm, well, I didn't do anything of note when I was 20. That might be why, but I can't remember either. So.
You were probably pissed, Luke, at 20.
Jules, can you remember something you did half your life ago? So when you were 24?
I'll piss off. I had a feeling that was coming.
Yeah. But good news for Theo, though.
Yeah, it was. It was, and his interview at the end was lovely, wasn't it? He's a nice lad. He seems like a really lovely lad, doesn't he? And he talks with a smile on his face. I mean, he scored in 14 consecutive Premier League seasons now, which is quite incredible considering he's only 31 years old. I mean, he's achieved so much. And when he was asked about this sort of new centre-forward role that he's playing in, he sort of said, you know, I'm secretly enjoying it. I'm enjoying kind of being in that front two with Che Adams. And actually, a shout out to Che Adams, who I think is in that scale of underrated players. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think his reputation changed, didn't he? He scored a lot of goals for Birmingham, or he certainly had a season where he did. And Southampton brought him in to be a goal scorer, or it seemed that way at least. I can't, you know, confess to know what goes on in David Morris's mind. But I think that expectation has been adjusted, hasn't it? He's adjusted his game to be a bit more of a link-up striker.
His
and he's doing it
brilliant.
Fantastically well. Yeah, he's superb.
Came to the Premier League in a lot of fanfare. People thought he was perfectly suited for the division, and it's taken him a while to settle in. And I think, you know, that's not hugely unusual in the grand scheme of football over the years. And, you know, good on him. He's kind of seems to have been able to adapt by now. But I think it was, I'd like to think that with Theo Walcott playing up front through the middle, that Arsene Wenger just rang him and said, good news, Theo, you are actually finally going to be playing up front through the middle, but it's going to be for Southampton.
Yeah. And he did miss a sitter, though, didn't he? Well, maybe not a sitter, but he had a one-on-one that he probably should have done better with.
Yeah. He didn't. It's testament. One of the things is interesting, because it's testament to how the media works and how the expectations on a player works in certain situations. Because Theo Walcott, clearly, as we've already touched on, breaks through at the age of 16, moves to Arsenal, and gets that ridiculous call up to the World Cup squad very early on in his career, and is now always going to be seen as this guy who had this amazing potential, and what it's done is it's clouded our ability to kind of judge his career, right? He's played over 500 games in professional football. I mean, he's 31 years old. He could, I mean, if he stays fit and he adapts his game even further, he could make a huge amount of appearances in the top flight as a professional football player, and he will still probably be judged as someone who never quite filled that potential, even though he got almost 50 England caps. You know, he's won a couple of trophies as well. I just think he's an interesting case, isn't he, Theo? And also, he does genuinely seem like a lovely lad. And in life, that is important.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure he scored over 100 goals for Arsenal. We scored a hat-trick for England. He's done a lot of things that are really, really, you know, notable. But as you say, I think he will just always have that hanging over him because of that mad decision. And also, footballers tend, even as I get older, and the way you kind of almost read people's faces changes. Like, footballers seem ageless, right? Like a young footballer still looks to me like they're older than me. Do you know what I mean? If they're athletic enough, right? Theo Walcott.
I'm looking at you now, and I've got news for you, mate.
Theo Walcott looked like a little boy, didn't he? When he was called up for England, he looked like he was 12.
Now he's got a top knot.
So have you. I can see you right now. You've got a top knot. Jules, have you ever interviewed Theo?
I haven't interviewed Theo before, but do you know what? I actually think that, different to what you guys are saying, I think it, obviously, in terms of his England career, it will always be seen as what could he have achieved. But I do think that in terms of his later Premier League career, this is a really good step for him. And I think that this potentially could see a bit of a revival in the kind of final stages of his football career.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
It'd be nice to have it for him to have a sort of swan song there. Because really, he didn't actually play for Southampton that much.
No.
He just wasn't there for long before he moved to Arsenal.
Exactly.
But yeah, good news for Southampton, though. Sorry, Luke, but they are fifth in the Premier League, unbeaten in seven now. And I think them and Wolves certainly going to be the two teams outside of the traditional top six who could potentially break into it this season. All right, let's move on and talk about Pardew. He's back in business, boys. And this side, not as a manager, but as a director of football. Yes, you heard that right. He is the new director of football at CSKA Sofia. I mean, what on earth? I didn't see this coming.
You can't keep a good man down. And that also applies to Alan Pardew.
There's nothing like a good man, and he is nothing like a good man. You guys, this is interesting, right? Because CSKA are the army team of Sofia, right? And the statement on the club's website, their nickname is the Army Men. And the statement on the website, we went into all sorts of different stuff about the big red family of the Army and referred to Alan as English football specialist Alan Pardew. And I don't know about you guys, and Jules, this might be a cultural reference lost on you, but I know Jim will know what I'm talking about.
Go on.
For me, Alan at CSK Moscow, at the team of the Army, she's got massive Ross Kemp in Extras vibes about it, where he just thinks he's an actual SAS soldier.
Oh, totally.
I have seen that. I do know the reference you mean. Yes, Jules. Love him
He's going to walk around in Army fatigues, talk about how he's going to prop himself up at the clubhouse, end of the bar in the clubhouse, talking about how he was in the SAS.
Yeah.
All sorts going
Fought
on.
Fought in the Falklands. Saying things like, turn up.
Yeah.
So if talking massive hypotheticals here, if Bulgaria do get involved in some sort of conflict, does Alan effectively get sort of called up into the organisation? Do they stay as the Army team?
Imagine the news
in wartime.
The news being broken to him, and it's just that golden smile just drops from his face. You what?
Yeah, I've got to do what?
I can't. I'm still under contract with Newcastle. You're not anymore, Alan. It ran out earlier this year. Damn.
That is bizarre, though, by the way, that he's had like three jobs since he left Newcastle: Crystal Palace, West Brom, and then he was at Den Haag, the Dutch side. But his contract at Newcastle only ended in June.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, people forget that, you know, he had a very good season or two at Newcastle. An inconvenient truth as much as that is anything. But, you know, I really like the statement on the website, as I've said. It ends, and this statement, if Alan's looked at it, would have caused him to double take, because the very last sentence was, "Welcome to the Army, Mr. Alan Pardew." And he's 59, so he's hoping, God, I hope I'm not actually in the Army, you know.
Oh, well, let's see what he can do there. Director of football, so he'll be in charge of getting in all the best players. I wonder who we might see move out there.
It's the best job in football, because if it goes really well, you get a 5,000-word article about you in The Athletic.
Yeah.
And if it goes terribly, you just leave. And no one blames you anyway. The manager goes. So it's fine. He can't. In many ways, it's interesting that it's taken this long for Alan to work out the grift. And he's now having a great time of it, I'm sure.
Bit of a Sven vibe. Do you know what I mean?
Big time.
A little world tour.
Big time. Absolutely, yeah, big time.
Lovely stuff. Well, welcome to the Army, Alan Pardew. Let's take a break after this. We got your emails.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This week on Stakhanov.
One Direction's Liam Payne was in the studio talking to Jack Mates Happy Hour about life as a global pop star, with untold stories about his time on The X Factor, life in the world's biggest boy band, and going solo. This one is not to miss.
I was part of this massive machine, and I knew my part in the machine very well. So I knew what I was doing every day. But then when that machine falls away, and you're in the world, and the world's just happening around, like, where do you fit?
You can catch the full episode on Spotify. If that doesn't tickle your fancy, on this week's Football Ramble Presents, Kate and Jim sat down with former Chelsea, Juventus and England striker and football legend Enya Luko to discuss her storied career and her autobiography, They Don't Teach This.
Whether it's racism, whether it's bullying, whether it's sexism, often these behaviours are silent. They're not always something that's said. It's a feeling, it's a set of behaviours by a group of people towards you that makes you feel incredibly isolated.
You can hear more from Enya Luko with Football Ramble Presents on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All that and more at Stakhanov.
Hi, I'm Jermaine Defoe, and this is the Football Ramble.
You're listening to the Football Ramble. It's now time for this.
Just email the show at footballramble.com. Right now, so Peter, Vish, or Kane, or Jules, or Jim, or Andy, Luke, or Marcus can read it out. Well done.
Yes, get in touch with us. You can email show at footballramble.com, or if you're on the Twitter, give us a tweet. It's at Football Ramble, and we've got
Jules,
this one.
Sorry, before you go into it, any kind of comment from you on the tweet that showed you photoshopped as the Mandalorian with Tarek Lamptey as Baby Yoda yesterday?
Well, I've never seen a single Star Wars film, so I don't. Is it the series or the film?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the
Mandalorian.
Series.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't understand any of it. I know who Yoda is. And did find those photos quite amusing. I mean, people have got so much time on their hands.
Well, they're at home, aren't they? They're stuck at home.
I know. I was pleasantly surprised at the effort put into that. And especially when, I think it was it Ryan? There was another guy on Twitter after Lorenzo put his up, his two photos, that was like, for fuck's sake, I've just spent ages building this and now I didn't need to.
Last week we had Andy photoshopped as Guile and Blanka from Street Fighter 2. Mm. And then yesterday we had you as the Mandalorian. So basically you're intergalactic bounty hunter that's looking after this little small Yoda thing. It actually looked quite
what
good.
What comes next? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows what comes next?
I have to say, I did tag Tarek Lamptey in it and he replied with laughing emojis. And so he thoroughly enjoyed it as well.
There you go. Oh,
there you go.
Great
stuff. Maybe we can get you to reenact that picture somehow. See if he's up for being held in a little sack on your back.
Little floating orb. Imagine if Tarek Lamptey played on the right back in a floating orb. It kind of feels like he does that anyway, so quick.
He does.
Anyway, emails.
Yes. So we've got an email here from the Heartbreak Kid, Darren Michaels.
Nice.
After Paul Dickov.
Just a sexy boy.
He certainly is. He's enclosed a very graphic photo. He hasn't. After Paul Dickov was mentioned on Luke's game a few weeks ago, it made me think back to the crazy start of the 96-97 season he had, where he played for 7 different managers before New Year's Day. He was at Arsenal when Bruce Rioch was sacked days before the start of the season. Stuart Houston then took charge and Paul was sold 10 days later. He was Alan Ball's last signing at Manchester City before Ball left 4 days later. Asa Hartford was then caretaker manager for 6 weeks before Steve Coppell came and went within 33 days. Cobble's assistant, Phil Neal, took caretaker charge for 6 weeks before Frank Clark was appointed permanent manager 2 days before New Year's Day, becoming Paul's 7th manager of the season.
That is
some upheaval, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it is massive. And Paul Dickov is a pretty good follow on Twitter, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
His pinned tweet is something about, he said, my kids always ask why the City fans sung Where Were You When We Were Shit? And I always used to say, I was playing.
Excellent
Which is quite
stuff.
Funny. But yeah, good email.
Yeah, keep your emails coming into us. We love hearing from you guys. show@footballramble.com. All right, let's get to the other game last night. It was the earlier kickoff. Did you watch it, Luke?
I did watch it, yeah, and survived to tell the tale. but I will need to go through several rounds of emotionally wrought therapy to get over it.
It wasn't
that bad. It was all right. I mean,
it was
the thing
right.
is, do you know what? With this game, They set off on a hide into nothing with me because it was my wedding anniversary yesterday.
Ah, oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
Yeah, thank you. We've been married 45 years. And and so this game kicked off, what, 5:30 or something? It was yeah. early anyway. And it felt too early. And I thought, you know what? I've got to watch it because I'm on the show tomorrow. And my wife is very understanding about it. But it kind of just annoyed me that I was spending my anniversary doing it.
I bet she was like, you're watching Burnley against Crystal Palace on our anniversary.
Yeah.
You lasted 4 years, Luke. You might not last many more.
I just, maybe
in the wrong direction.
That's going to be the case anyway, Jules. That's absolutely clear. This will very much be a tiny straw on the camel's back. But I just don't think in principle, I know we've all got to make adjustments and make compromises, but I just don't think we should have to watch Burnley Crystal Palace at 5:30. To me, that is a Saturday 3 o'clock. Yeah. Don't televise it. If you have to, stick it on the BBC.
No. You put it on Saturday 3 o'clock. It means we've got to watch it on BT Sports Score.
But you're getting paid to do that.
Yeah, and there's other games you can watch as well. And you just talk to Andy.
It's a textbook game where if it's on BT Sports Score, the presenter, not you, the other one, chucks to the guy watching it and says, or the girl watching it, and says, any news? No news.
Nothing's happened.
Yeah. It's actually quite impressive.
Yeah.
It's one of those games where it's nice to have a bit of colour in the room because the pitch is green. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the best bit.
Similar to snooker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think this game was great. I liked Vish's shout that Chris Wood looks like the most friend of a friend looking bloke you've ever seen. just pops up on an occasional night out. You never fully find out what his second name is or who he actually knows.
Or you forget his first name as well.
Yeah, he's a solid guy though. It will stand you a pint. And I was pleased for him to get a goal. Beyond that, I could say something about the fact that they miss Zaha because that's clearly a big miss for Crystal Palace. But then Crystal Palace fans will get on my back and say, well, actually. And that's all I've got
to say, really. You can hit them with a stat, Luke. Say, well, Palace fans, you've lost 13 of your last 15 games without Wilfred Zaha. So come at me.
I thought that we mentioned this when he signed, but when Eze signed for Palace, he thought, okay, here's a guy who can carry the ball. He's really good at carrying the ball and he can take the pressure off Palace in the same way kind of Zaha does. I know Palace had their chances. I know that they had a plenty
Nick
of
Pope
shots.
Nick Pope was brilliant, to be fair.
I think he was given man of the match, actually. Yeah. So look, it doesn't tell the whole story. Mm. On the Burnley side, though, they needed the win really badly. And as Sean Dyche said, once they run his voice through that changer where you can get it in the right octave where you can actually hear it, he said, it's a platform for us. It's something we need to build on. And he's absolutely right because it's their first win of the season. Now they've got a game in hand, but still their first win of the season. They lift themselves out of the relegation zone. If they win their game in hand, they'll stay exactly where they are.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a platform, isn't it?
Yeah. And also, I mean, like their first win of the season, it seems... I think, are we glossing over that? That's it's so late for us to be saying that about any team. And let alone that, it's their first goal at home. Like, they really have kind of gone under the radar, having a pretty terrible time of it.
I know there was that season when Burnley got into Europe scoring less than a goal a game,
a couple of seasons ago. Two, three seasons ago, wasn't it?
But Jules, they've scored 4 goals in 8 games this season. That is 19 goals this season pro rata. For the whole season.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to stay in the Premier League scoring 19 goals this season. They know something's got to change. Mm. I was saying before that it might be a little bit early to judge teams because it's such an amount of adjustment going on. But you wonder whether they're suffering from the pre-season situation by the fact that they rely so heavily on their work rate. They rely a lot on their home form as well. And we've talked about this already. Home form's kind of out the window in some cases now. So there's a lot to be... a lot to be fearful for. There's also a lot to be said for this season, more than any other, that a couple of teams are going to stay in this division by just not being as shit as three other teams. And that's what we're going to see.
This is a kind of bread and butter kind of result for Burnley, isn't it? These are the kind of wins.
And they have to win that game.
This was the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, so they would have been eyeing this one, wouldn't they, Jim? Home game against Crystal Palace. Say what you want about fans or no fans, but being at home, they will still be eyeing up these sort of ties as the ones that they needed to win. And I think now, from a mental perspective as well, for the Burnley players, they've now got that first home win out the way, the first win of the season. They're now out of the bottom three in the Premier League as well. All of that will make a difference to the dressing room. Just kind of that bit of relief, isn't it? Because there can be nothing worse as players if every week after your match, you keep hearing everyone in the media talk about, there's still three teams waiting for their first win of the season. Yeah. Well, now Burnley aren't in that anymore. So now there's only two teams waiting for their first win of the season. And I think Burnley will be pleased that they've got that off their back. They've got their win. They've got their home goal. Got more points on the board. And I mean, I just feel like it would have been a massive relief. And you could see that in Jay Rodriguez, who got the assist for Chris Wood's goal. In his interview post-match, he just seemed so relieved. It was actually quite a nice interview as well, because Jamie Carragher brought up the whole happy place, Turf Moor thing from yes. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Have you guys been watching? I don't think we've talked about that yet.
I've seen a bit of it, yeah. I've seen that thing you're talking about, and I saw Mo Farah. A Knight of the Realm. No, why is Mo Farah even doing it?
Well, I thought that as well, Luke.
He's got the Olympics.
I'm only just learning that he is.
That's Jim, he's got the Olympics next year.
Yeah.
I mean, what's going on? He's running around some room with slime all over the floor, falling on his ass every 5 minutes. He's got the Olympics next year.
Is that how he's training, though? Is he doubling it up?
Yeah, he's like a mental breeze.
Mental training. Slime Olympics.
Yeah, he's covered in maggots, sliming around all over the floor. I have seen a bit of it, yeah.
It's great. I just love it. I mean, it's such good telly at the moment for people who need a bit of cheering up.
But Jay Rodriguez is the world's most northern man.
Yeah.
He is violently northern.
It's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah. It beggars belief how northern he is.
Well, Jamie Carragher asked him to say the happy place, Turf Moor thing, because I think all of his teammates have been getting him to do impersonations of Jordan North from the show. So it was quite nice.
By the way, when Mauricio Pochettino was on Monday Night Football, the internet went mad with he's on manoeuvres rumours. Yeah. And Eddie Howe was in there last night, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He was.
What manoeuvres is Eddie on?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, he's just being a nice man.
He's got nothing to do.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's interesting that, you know, you've got two highly rated out of work managers, and Pochettino sets the world on fire when he goes on Monday Night Football because he's got his hair and he's a charmer. But Eddie Howe's a good looking fella and he's got highly rated and people have linked him with jobs. I want to know where he's going.
Mm. I think the Derby fans wouldn't mind having a bit of Eddie Howe at Derby, but that's if he can see off Toby Hall, who's a 9-year-old who applied for the job. Did you see this, Jim?
I did see this, and the thing that
I put him up front. They can't score. They can't buy a goal. Put him up front.
The thing with this is he was interviewed on the radio, wasn't he? Where he actually pretty much had a sort of like mock job interview.
It was very cute.
It was very cute. But it's been humid enough that at some point this kid is going to be crushed.
Like
he's thinking in his head.
Oh, Christmas is coming up. Yeah. What's going to happen?
Maybe they will give me the job. Yeah. Maybe they actually will.
There was genuinely a point, wasn't there, Jim, where when Mel Morris started asking him questions about moving closer to Pride Park, you could see his little face. He was a bit like, hang on a minute. I loved his response to it as well. He was like, well, my nanny and granddad only live 10 miles from Pride Park, so we can go see them on the way. Oh, yeah. Bless him.
Morris is like, oh, God, I'm going to have to destroy this kid on radio for his own good.
I saw the quotes written down before I saw the actual interview, which I watched afterwards. And when I read this quote, I like football a lot. I like designing formations and I think I'm quite good at it. I genuinely thought it was a Pep Guardiola quote.
Yeah.
Exactly the sort of thing Pep Guardiola would say.
Though he's physically in the room, his eyes suggest he's in some other realm.
Yeah.
But he's yet to earn his coaching badges, so he can't have a job.
He's 9 years old.
I know. Unfortunate, isn't it?
Probably not got a driving licence either.
No.
Like Jim.
No, I haven't got one. For good reason.
Can you not drive, Jim?
No, I had a test and it was deemed that it wasn't safe for me to drive. I mounted the curb while a lady in a mobility scooter was coming down the other way, which I imagine was a major fail.
On the actual test?
When was that?
On the test. That was a long time ago.
How long?
In Brighton, actually. So it would have been four or five years ago.
And you've never gone back since?
No. Well, I live in London. What's the point of having a car in London, et cetera, et cetera? Policemen getting younger.
How on earth did you mount the curb on your driving test?
Well, Jules, look.
Well, I'm not a confident driver, shall we say.
I think I'm trying to say this in the most tactful way possible, because obviously, as you guys know, I'm a very tactful man. I think that if I was drawing up a list of the 10 people I know that I'd like least to get in the car with, Jim would be in the top 10.
Yeah. I mean, I am.
You would be in your own top 10, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I'm convinced that roundabouts have like a personal vendetta against me. That's the sort of maelstrom that my head becomes when I get into a car.
I'd love to be sat there with Jim getting ready to pull out at a roundabout and just panicking at what's
you
coming.
Wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't.
Trust me. You'd want to be in a Volvo estate, if that were the case, to make sure you're safe as possible.
Or maybe a tank.
So, how many goes did it take you on your driving test?
Me?
Yeah.
I passed first time.
Oh, of course you did. How many minors? How many?
I think I had 13 minors at the
time. I beat you. 5 minors for me.
Yeah, but it's like A-levels. They get easier as the time goes along. I did mine in 1974, so it got easier then.
All the best drivers fail the first test. Such bollocks, that, isn't it? That's such self-aggrandizing crap.
Because as we've established, you are a dreadful driver and you failed first time. Exactly. So it can't be true.
Exactly. Anyway. We were talking about I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here a minute ago with the Burnley game. And did you guys see this? That Neil Warnock said that he was asked to go into it. He said, I was nearly in the jungle. It might have been 2 or 3 years ago, but I was approached. And he said, imagine if I'd said yes, everybody would have been voting for me, wouldn't they, to do every bloody thing. Yeah, I think we would have done.
Oh, really?
That would have been genius.
It would have been great, wouldn't it? I'm so aware of what we've missed out on then.
Yeah.
Imagine Neil Warnock, like, eating a kangaroo's anus just so the loads of people he doesn't even like
and
can
then
eat.
Going along a Celebrity. Jim, would you, if Neil Warnock was on it, would you watch it?
Oh my God, every day.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
The man's box office.
Yeah. I kind of feel like on I'm a Celebrity, you get the people who get chosen for every task are either really funny, as in they think, oh, it's going to be great entertainment value,
yeah,
or they're going to be hated and that's why they get chosen.
Yeah.
And weirdly, Neil is both.
Yeah, totally.
So I think he probably would have got every single challenge.
There's this perception about Neil Warnock that's slightly wrong, isn't there? That he's this kind of grumpy, kind of almost like disciplinarian, which I think is a surface level, entry level opinion of Neil Warnock. But he is quite warm and affable, in a quite spiky way. It's a weird.
What's the fully woke position? Opinion? Like, is it like, oh, he's actually? Because I would imagine him to be. I can kind of see why players like playing for him, because I can imagine he's almost like, and clearly he's not in the same level as this, so I'll take this under advice. He's clearly got a bit of the Brian Clough kind of, come on lad, arm around the shoulder, you know,
that's the headline of the show now, Luke.
I know.
Luke compares Neil Warnock to Brian Clough.
I've had worse, don't worry, but you know what I mean, you put his arm around you, he'd be really encouraging of you, but he'd give you a bollocking if he did something wrong.
Yeah.
But he would be super honest, so I do get the attraction, and I wonder whether if he went and I'm a Celebrity, he would be almost like the grandfather of the camp and he'd actually end up being really popular.
A little bit like Harry Redknapp was.
Yeah, I didn't watch that season.
Oh, it was so good. And I think the thing with Neil Warnock is if he went in, he would be the classic. He'd come out with so many good one-liners, wouldn't he?
Mm.
Oh, definitely. Speaking of Harry Redknapp, he had an amazing one the other day when he was talking about how the wages for players are unreal and all this, that and the other. And someone then pointed out on Twitter that when he left Portsmouth, Portsmouth's wages were 108% of turnover. So, you know,
was he chuckling as he said that?
I don't know. Not ideal.
What was that on, Luke?
It was on Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
On the old Twitterers, yeah, exactly.
Genius. Chairman, mate. Blame the chairman.
Yes, I didn't actually see him when I'm a Celebrity. Did he win it, Jules?
I think he did, didn't he?
Yes, he did. King of the Jungle.
Wow, there we go.
Yes. It was very good. Very good.
I wonder if that's a small consolation for not being England manager.
Maybe. Right, that's all from us today. If you enjoyed this episode, there's plenty more where that came from over on our Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you can have access to exclusive extra Ramble On episodes where we bring you something a little bit different every week. 1 week, we'll look back on a huge moment from football history. The next, it'll be Andy Brassel's dream football career, something we did this week where he decided he would score 58 goals in one season in the Championship before playing international football for Turkey. Yeah, it is as ridiculous as it sounds. Make sure you give it a listen. Support the Ramble by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble and subscribe now. Luke,
can I just say, I've actually heard that episode already.
Yeah.
And he argues to, I mean, you can imagine what Marcus is on the show with him.
Yeah.
And Marcus, obviously being this tub-thumping like England fan, is absolutely incredulous.
I bet he is.
Because Andy says that he goes and plays for like Galatasaray or something in his own dream football career. And the Turkish people take him to their heart so much that he becomes a naturalized Turkish person and plays for Turkey in like an international tournament. It's like some kind of amazing like Colin Kazin Richards type thing.
Genius. Brilliantly designed to wind up Marcus.
Exactly. It works a treat as well. So yeah, patreon.com/footballramble and you can go and listen to that.
Yeah, perfect. Give it a listen. And speaking of Turkey and Turkish clubs, Istanbul Başakşehir face Manchester United tonight in the Champions League. Champions League returns. Marcus, Pete and Andy are going to be back tomorrow. They'll be touching on all of tonight's matches in the Champions League. We will see you very soon. Luke, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Jim, say goodbye.
Bye.
I'm glad you're getting public transport home. Speak to you soon. Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.